Welcome to the Beltway Broadcast, the premier podcast for the workplace learning and talent development professionals of the Association for Talent Development's Metro DC chapter. We've got some great resources in store for you today.
Hello, fellow ATDers. I'm Stephanie Hubka, and I am the managing partner of Protos Learning, as well as a chapter past president and a member of the Pod Squad here at the Metro DC chapter of ATD.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Eanes, and like Stephanie, well, actually, I'm owner of Eanes Training, and like Stephanie, I'm also a member of the Pod Squad here and a chapter past president.
Absolutely. And of course, we have our producer, Helena Hodges. And for this episode, we are interviewing Dr. Candy Weens. Welcome, Candy.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here with you guys.
We're really excited to have you here. This is a topic that I have no doubt is going to resonate for every single person in our listening and viewing audience. But before we get into the conversation of the week, we would love it if you would take a few moments and introduce yourself to all of us.
Sure. Hi, everybody. It's really good to be here. I am a senior fellow at the University of Pennsylvania. That's my official role, which means I do a lot of research and I teach. I teach in graduate level programs and a lot of executive format programs. I also run a couple of master's programs at Penn. So that's my official role. I've also been an executive coach for many years. I have about 23 years of experience in organizational consulting, organizational change management consulting, and leadership development. So my background is pretty diverse, the practitioner side of it. In 2016, I got my doctorate from Penn, and then I started working at the University of Pennsylvania in about 2017. I am the mom of three boys. Two of them are teenagers, 17 and 19, and my oldest is almost 21, and live in Philadelphia. And I'm really excited to be here with you all today and to talk a little bit about my research and my book, Burnout Immunity.
Yeah, we are. Well, first of all, we're thrilled you're here. And burnout is such an important topic. In fact, if you think back over the last couple of years, this may be one of the biggest topics that has come out, partially because of the pandemic, but certainly because this is something that so many of us encounter. I think certainly in talent development, but really every industry has been impacted by burnout. But that said, I think if you were to ask any one person to define it or to describe it, you'd probably get a lot of different answers as to what it is. That's probably a good place for us to start today. So I would love it if you could tell us a little bit about what burnout is, and maybe even more importantly than that, what does burnout feel like?
Yeah, I appreciate that you asked that question because I'm on a mission right now to do a number of things. One of them is to help people understand and help us all gain a common understanding, common language around what burnout is. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like the term gets misused and overused a lot. I mean, almost to the point where I hear so many people saying, I'm burned out, I feel burned out. And it makes me wonder if everyone is burned out, is anyone really burned out? And so it's important for us as practitioners to understand what that means so that we can get people the right help.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with burnout. Here's the definition of it. And then I'll tell you what it's not. So here's what it is. It's a psychological syndrome, meaning that it can come and go. So we can experience bouts of burnout in different, maybe stages of our life or stages of our career or whatever. And it can come and go throughout a year. We might feel more burned out more intensely at certain points of the year because of personal things or things going on in our jobs. But, you know, think about it as something that we're not either just burned out or not burned out. It's a syndrome that can come and go. And there are also degrees of it. We can have low levels of burnout, moderate, or even really high levels of burnout. It's characterized by three common symptoms. And so when we research this and when we really measure people's level of burnout, first of all, whether or not they're burned out and then the degree of their burnout, we're looking for three things. Number one, feelings of emotional exhaustion and what that feels like to people, what they often say, they will say, when I wake up in the morning, I feel like I have absolutely no energy to go to work today. Not just physical energy, but I can't give another ounce of emotional energy to anyone I work with today. That's the first symptom. The second symptom is a feeling of just being really cynical towards the people that you work with or to your clients or customers or students, patients. It's your feelings about other people. So if you feel cynical or have a bad attitude about people that you work with, anyone in your work environment, that's also a really strong indicator that burnout is prevalent, that you're experiencing it. The third symptom is that feeling that we feel less effective in our work. So we might have a normal level of effectiveness for the most part, but if we start to feel like, you know, I just don't feel like I'm in my groove as much as I usually am, I'm not getting the feedback that I need to know whether or not I'm doing a good job at work, or I feel like my efforts are going unnoticed, or I feel like I'm putting a lot of effort into work, but it just doesn't seem like it's getting anywhere. That's that feeling of just being really, really ineffective. So those are the three most common symptoms of burnout. And the way all of this can show up for each of us is very different. So if I put 100 people in a room and they were all under the same stressful conditions, some of them would profile as burned out and some not burned out. The ones who are burned out would also have a lot of variability in the way that they experience their burnout. Some could say, you know what, my burnout is mostly the result of me just feeling really ineffective at work right now. Others might say, I'm just so emotionally exhausted because I'm giving a lot of emotional energy to other people. So that's a common definition. And I just would like everybody to learn that it is very different from person to person. It's not just a one size fits all psychological syndrome.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you lay it out like that. And in your book as well, I know when I was reading your book, I realized I had been in a massive burnout twice in my life, and I didn't realize it until I read your book and read through, you know, what you had just talked about. So it was extremely eye-opening.
Good. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And one of the things I hope to do with the book and with the other work I do, whether it's writing or speaking, is to help people learn that if you would characterize what you're feeling as burned out, you might want to look a little deeper. Those feelings of burnout might be telling you something else. For example, it might just be feelings of being overworked, having too much work to do, or it might be feelings of being disengaged. We've all heard about quiet quitting.
Yeah.
Right. If you're feeling like you're a bit of a quiet quitter and you just are just biding your time, waiting to eventually make an exit plan, that's a feeling of disengagement. That's not burnout. It's different than burnout, but it's also a psychological feeling about work. And there are others too. But the main thing to recognize is that just because you might not feel as much motivation or you are characterizing what you feel as burned out, doesn't necessarily mean that you are burned out. The first step is first measuring it. And I have a tool that can help people do that. Yeah.
Well, I love that you mentioned self-awareness too, because like you, I didn't even realize I had two major medical issues related to the burnout. And if I would have known earlier and had more self-awareness, I might have been able to stop it before it got that point. Can you share a little bit more about self-awareness and maybe the tool that you have?
Yeah. Self-awareness is one of the most fundamental and foundational aspects of how we can protect ourselves from burnout. And it starts with first using a tool like my tool, which is called the Burnout Risk Assessment, to help you understand whether or not you're burned out or whether or not you're at risk for burning out. Because just like if you were to go to the doctor for stomach pains, it's hard for a doctor to recommend anything until he or she can diagnose exactly what's going on with you. And so tools like the Burnout Risk Assessment, and there are other tools as well, can help us first gain a better awareness, a better understanding of what we're experiencing so that we get the right diagnosis and we can get the right help that we need based on whatever is going on with us. But I write a lot about awareness I dedicate a whole chapter to it in the book. And it has to do, of course, with self-awareness, but it also has to do with having a really strong awareness of why there might be a disconnect between what you need in a work environment and what your work environment is giving to you. So for example, each of us has a personality and we have a temperament and we all have life experiences, those three things that we bring to our work environment. And so with my unique personality and temperament and my past experiences, I have certain desires and needs from my work environment. There's certain things that I want to have in my work environment. And when those needs are not met, that puts me at greater risk and vulnerability for burnout. So I write a lot about that, about how you can use your self-awareness to assess where you might have disconnects between what you need and what's going on in your work environment. The awareness chapter has a lot of stuff too on how you can become aware of what makes you tick and what ticks you off. Mm-hmm. So what makes you tick is all the motivation stuff. What is it that motivates me? And the what ticks me off, those are the triggers. So if I have a really strong awareness of what really motivates me at work, and if I have a really strong awareness of what ticks me off at work, what triggers me, I can better understand what I need and advocate for myself in what I need at work. So those are a couple of big ways we use our awareness.
I love that. I love the idea that you can really be an advocate for yourself. Because a lot of times when we think about burnout, I think what we're really talking about, or what it sounds like a lot of people are talking about, are those really late stages where just quitting your job is really the only thing you can focus on. But it sounds like there's quite a bit that you can do to track or to balance, just to advocate for what you're really looking for, to perhaps prevent yourself from getting to that point. And thinking about self-awareness actually got me thinking about something else. I think for any of us who have ever experienced burnout in any capacity on the job, we've also seen people who have been going through that. Maybe we've recognized something in ourselves and we're seeing it in somebody else. I'm curious what your thoughts are as far as what you might be able to do if you see that a colleague might be experiencing burnout. Are there things that we can do to show support or to provide assistance or perhaps to get them through what could be a pretty difficult time for them?
Absolutely. And I appreciate when I see examples of that and when I hear stories of people who recognize that some of their coworkers might really be struggling, because that's the number one thing that you can do as a friend and as a colleague and as a peer is to, first of all, notice that someone else is, you know, going through a period of time where you're observing behaviors in them and you're hearing them say things that they might not normally. And so to first recognize it is a big deal, but then secondly, to show support, and that might look differently for everyone. And depending on the power dynamics too, you know, if it's someone that reports to you, that might be very different than if you notice that your boss is burned out.
Right.
That can get very sensitive. If you notice that your boss or your boss's boss and that whole executive level is burned out, like that's a sensitive conversation. But if you have, you know, a friendly, collaborative type of relationship with those folks, having just even sitting down for a cup of coffee and saying, you know, I'm noticing in myself, and you can talk about your own experience first, like as a door opener, by saying, you know, my own experience right now with stress at work is it's escalating. It's becoming more than I can manage. It's a little more than my psyche can handle right now. And I was just curious, I'm starting to see some signs that it's kind of going around in our culture. And would you be open to having a conversation about your experience and maybe opening it up to our team so that our team can have an open conversation about this?
I like that.
I love that as a recommendation.
Yeah. You know, let's take this even a little step further. As TD professionals, what can we do for an organization to make sure that we are reducing or limiting this burnout?
Yes. So this actually gets to the second book that I want to write called, I'm super passionate about this. Like, we have got to make workplaces better places,
absolutely,
to healthier for people to work in. If we want to retain great talent, we all know this, we've known it for years. And so it goes to culture. And the book that I wrote that's coming out in April is about developing individual resilience and protecting ourselves from burnout. But the next book is all about creating a burnout immunity culture.
Nice.
So if you are a leader or you're a talent development professional where your job is to optimize the performance of your team or the organization, but you want to do it in a way where you're not creating burnout, or you want to minimize the level of burnout or reduce it if you are measuring it. And so there are a number of things specifically that talent development professionals can do. Number one, start by measuring it. Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations do engagement surveys. Engagement surveys are good. And as you know, there are many hundreds of different types of engagement surveys out there. They can be a proxy for measuring burnout, but they don't specifically measure. If you really want to know, like, whether or not your workforce is burned out, there are specific tools to do that. And they're really easy to administer and to understand and produce results and, you know, develop an analysis report from. So I would say, be clear on what it is you want to measure and measure it, and then design interventions around that. I mentioned a little bit earlier that just because someone's saying they're burned out doesn't mean that they are. They could be profiling as overworked, disengaged, ineffective, or engaged. Those are the four other profiles when we measure this stuff on a real scientific level. And if we're measuring the right things, then we can design the right interventions around it. So for example, if we were to use this particular instrument to measure burnout, but when we get the results back, if we're seeing like, well, actually the burnout rates aren't as high as we thought they were, but the people who are profiling as ineffective, that's different. That's a very different intervention. That includes things like more training and more feedback, more coaching, more mentorship, more support and resources. So start by measuring it, then design the intervention based on what comes back in the report.
I love a good data-driven approach. And I think it makes a lot of sense too, especially when you're talking about what you can do for larger groups of people. There's a lot that can be done at the individual level, but when you're thinking about what it looks like for the collective, for your team or your organization, it does make sense to collect as much of that data and information as possible. So I love that as a strategy that people might be able to think about. And thinking too, really about some of the groups that you may have looked at or researched or come to understand through the concept of burnout immunity, I'm wondering if you identified any characteristics or traits or maybe even practices that people who are less likely to be susceptible to burnout might be employing in their day-to-day that others who maybe are going to lean a little bit more toward burnout might be able to learn from.
Yes, that is the whole book. The entire book is based off of, I've now studied thousands of people and I've interviewed at least 200 of them. What I've been looking at specifically are people who tell me that their stress levels are severe, very severe, or worst possible. Mm-hmm. Yet when I measure whether they're burned out or not, I study the people who are not burned out. So these are people who literally are telling me that for at least 6 month period of time, they're experiencing very severe, worst possible stress when I interview them. And when they take this instrument that I administer, they're not burned out. I learn really specific ways in which they're using their emotional and social intelligence. So every chapter of the book is dedicated to a specific EI competency, awareness, regulation, meaningful connections, our outlook on life and our outlook on stress itself. Think of that also as mindset. Mm-hmm. And then the final competency is around recovering when we are burned out, reconnecting with things and people that are meaningful in our lives, and then reimagining once we're recovered from burnout or we have at least reduced our risk level of burnout, reimagining a healthier relationship with work and how we want work to fit into our lives.
Yeah.
So the book is chock full of all of my research, lots of other people's research, but stories from real life people, including the police chief of San Francisco, the sheriff of Los Angeles County, the largest county in the United States, some top executives, bartenders and baristas, frontline workers, physicians. Like, I've got stories in the book from people who, again, they're experiencing high degrees of stress at work, but they're not burned out. And I show you how they're protecting themselves.
I love it. And I can attest to how awesome they are.
Agreed.
One completely. Thing that I really love too, well, I love all of it. But when you talk about mindset in the book, mm-hmm. and I was curious as I was reading through it, some thoughts on, you know, perception is reality, right? We create our reality. Where is that line between, you know, I'll get through this, you know, having that, the growth mindset, and the line mm-hmm. between, and I'm asking for a friend, is being somewhat delusional with, you know, optimism. So where is that line between getting through and being maybe a little delusional?
That's such a great question. It's a tough one because, I mean, we all know that when we can engage a positive outlook and an optimistic outlook, it does change our subjective experience with a stressor. Mm-hmm. We just see that stressor differently. But there is a fine line though, too, where we don't want to become Pollyanna optimistic. Yeah. to the point where we're expecting and hoping, just hoping and hoping and hoping that someday our boss is going to start recognizing our work, or hoping that someday that toxic coworker is going to finally tune it down and stop being so rude to everybody. And so at some point we just have to, it's a constant check-in on reality and on our own subjective experience of the stress. And I would say too, check in on what it is you can control versus not control.
Oh, yeah.
And if your hope is that something else is going to change, you might want to check that. Mm. Because if you don't have a control over that other person or that thing that's stressing you out, then all the optimism in the world won't help if you don't have control over what that is that's stressing you out.
Mm. I think it's that that's such an important thing to keep in mind, and it's such an important strategy for people to think about. That's one of the things that really excites me about this book that you've written. It is full of fantastic stories, full of great ideas and examples. And I think people are really going to want to make sure that they get a copy of this. So I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit more about where they can find this, how they can reach out to you. I think you'll have a few people out there who are going to want to stay in touch.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate all the support on the book. And it's not just about selling books. This was not my mission to sell a bunch of books. My mission is to help people protect themselves from burnout so they can better advocate for themselves and change cultures. Healthy people make healthy cultures.
Yes.
And so we need people to recover from burnout and be protected from burnout so that they can in turn either lead or work alongside leaders to change culture. So you can buy the book on any online retailer. It's been available for pre-order on Amazon. You can go directly to my website, which is candyweens.com, KandyWiens.com. What I would say is that if anyone wants to order 10 or more copies, you know, for a book club or new hires or a leadership development program, reach out to me directly, and you can do that on my website. You'll see incentives there. So if you buy 10 or more copies, you get a 25% discount off the retail price. Plus, you would be invited to a 1-hour Meet the Author virtual session. I haven't set those dates yet, but I'm going to offer some things, some incentives for people to buy 10 or more copies. And if you're really serious, if you want to buy 100 or more copies for your organization, I'll do a free virtual keynote for you.
Ooh,
what a gift.
Yes.
That's incredible. Wow. Amazing. And the book is well worth the read.
Yes.
So I love the fact you're offering that.
Yes.
Oh,
no, we want to get it in people's hands.
Oh, yeah.
It needs to be there.
We're going to get that message out because everyone needs to get it. So, well, this time has flown by. I can't believe how fast we're
as always.
I know, as always, but we're not quite done yet. We have three more questions for you. At the end of every episode, we ask rapid fire questions, no more than about 60 seconds needed for a response. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yay. Okay. So this is a big one. What is one, obviously yours, but what is one book that everyone must read and why?
Thanks, Chris. Yes, please read my book. That is one of my favorite books right now. You know, I'm really into this book lately, and I just started it 2 weeks ago, and I'm kind of reading it slowly. There's a reason I'm reading it slowly, though, because the name of the book is called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And it, for me, I need that book because I tend to run at a pace that is really rapid and hardly sustainable after a while. Like after a month or two of traveling and, all, you know, crazy rapid pace, I need to slow down. And so this book is just such a great reminder of why it's important to slow down, how to slow down. And the author, John Mark Comer, talks about hurry being the greatest threat to our emotional and spiritual well-being. And I believe that for myself. And so it's been an incredibly helpful book.
Nice.
And it's aligned with my research as well, too. So
I love it. Okay. What is one tool you can't live without?
One tool. I had to really think about this one. So I've been having car problems lately. I have a car that has given me no trouble for 10 years. It's an old Land Rover, 13-year-old Land Rover. But lately my battery keeps going out on me. So replace the battery, brand new battery. So what I cannot live without right now are my jumper cables.
No,
that works.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to use the jumper cables.
Oh, Oh, and the mechanics listening will be contacting you shortly. No. Okay, final one. What is the best piece of advice or your favorite piece of advice that you've ever been given?
My favorite piece of advice came to me in the form of an interview question. When my boss interviewed me for my job at Penn, I'd known her for years. She was my chair, dissertation chair. We're friends. So it wasn't like a real interview. She asked me one question. That one question now has turned into advice that I feel like it was her advice to me. She asked me, how do you want work to fit into your life? Mm. And so that is a piece, it's advice in the form of a question, but it hit me in the core because it made me really think about before I take this job that I thought I knew I wanted it. I love this job. I wouldn't leave for anything, but it really made me think about my relationship with work going forward. Because as you'll read in the book, it was quite unhealthy for a period of time. And so that question can really help you evaluate how you want work to fit into your life and what type of relationship you want to have with your work, because it's a relationship. We don't just go to work to make money or for career. It is a relationship that we have. So it's really powerful for me, and I've passed that advice on to other people.
That's fantastic advice. And I have to say, Candy, I'm so grateful, first of all, for your time today, for this fantastic conversation, and especially for what you are giving to this concept and study of burnout. The structure through which we can understand it, the strategies through which we can prevent it or get through it. We are so grateful to you for being here and for helping us to think through what is such an important conversation for organizations all through the Metro DC area, certainly, but really across the globe. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. And I thank you really for helping me get the message out. And I just really appreciate the time today. I appreciate your listeners tuning in.
We have the greatest listeners in the world. And of course, a big thank you to everyone in our listening and viewing community for watching. And before you go, we do have a message from our producer, Helena Hodges.
Do you need consultant services? The Metro DC chapter of ATD has many talented members. Go to dcatd.org. and check out our consultants directory under the resources menu option.
Want to network with other chapter members? Join the Metro DC chapter of ATD members on LinkedIn today.